And we are speaking with Dr. Anthony Frank, who is the Chief Medical Officer and Senior Vice President of Medical Affairs at UNC Health Blue Ridge in Morganton. Dr. Frank, would you say that there's still some stigma, even among healthcare professionals, about mental health?
Absolutely. And this is probably one of the larger problems that we have now. It's a huge challenge, both locally and nationally. I was just actually in Florida working with some local fire departments and EMS workers there as we were talking about mobile integrated health and community paramedicine, which is actually kind of the front line for some of this work. And they're talking about the challenges that they face as they are working in this space and having physicians to help support them and be willing to prescribe some of these medications. The challenge here really is that most of the physicians that you'll find in practice currently, they've not really been trained to manage patients with substance use disorder. And there's a bit of fear in doing it. Obviously, most of us, if we're doing something new and we've not really been trained to do it, there's always a bit of anxiety as you're trying to step into that. And as busy as a lot of physicians are, it's just, you know, it's a challenge to feel like you know enough about it to be able to do this. The DEA had originally, I think, in what they had implemented, I think they were on the right track. They had implemented something called an X waiver, which required you to get about 8 hours of training in substance use disorder and these particular medications so that you would be eligible to prescribe them. And unfortunately, what we were finding is that most physicians just didn't have the time or weren't willing to achieve an X waiver. So the DEA's solution to that, and again, rightly so, I believe, they removed this X waiver so that any physician is able to prescribe medications for substance use disorder. And these are typically buprenorphine or a combination of buprenorphine and other medications. Interestingly, in general, this particular medication is probably one of the safer medicines out there and much safer than a lot of the other medications that we use to treat hypertension and other disorders. So a lot of this really winds up being a willingness to be educated, kind of have an open mind and be willing to look. The other thing, the other reluctance to this where I think there's some stigma and hesitancy is that the thoughts with these patients is these may not be the patients that you would want in your private physician office. The unfortunate piece of that is, like we talked about earlier, this is actually the people that you're likely already taking care of. You just have to ask the question and be aware to look for the signs of it. These are likely patients that physicians already have on their physician panels and are folks that are already in your office. So just having the ability to recognize this medical condition may be in patients you're already treating their hypertension or their diabetes and be willing to ask questions around that. We did have a session here as part of these forums that was a little more exclusive in the fact that we were directing the invitations to our local community of primary care physicians and specialists. And we had some didactic teaching as well as a welcome. Dr. Lloyd also did a welcome for us virtually for our physician group. And then we had a panel discussion with some of our local physician experts. We had emergency medicine, some of our hospitalists, community family medicine, and had the opportunity to talk to other clinicians in our area about what their reticence was to prescribe these medications, what they were finding was the challenge or the drawbacks. And interestingly, after that particular meeting, we did have the opportunity, several physicians that weren't currently doing this that came up and said, you know, this is really something that we need to be talking about and something we need to be doing in our practices. As we talk about this as a medical disorder and a medical condition, physicians really are starting to respond and asking questions about how do I do this? And I think some of the best ways to do this in your community, and what I found here, is that we have several folks that have been doing this for a while as part of their practice. And those physicians are usually willing to give you their cell phone number. And if you have these patients, reaching out and saying, I've got this patient in front of me, can you help me? How do I do this? And we're noticing that we're gaining some traction when we're making those connections between clinicians. And this is typically something that colleagues are happy to help each other with. So really learning a lot of lessons about how to do this and how to spread this word. But it's been slow going. And as I said, it's a couple of doctors at a time.
That's interesting. And I love the collaborative aspect of that because, you know, from in any profession, it certainly helps to be able to talk with a colleague about certain things and, you know, one-on-one. So I'm going to ask you two really stupid questions. One is the medication you talked about a couple of minutes ago, was that buprenorphine?
Yeah, buprenorphine. So buprenorphine.
Okay. And then the second thing is you talk about substance use or abuse disorder. Is that different from just plain old substance abuse, or is that really the culmination of all of the different types of substance abuse? Like, is there a difference? Is there a medical condition that is actually a disorder using substances or abusing substances versus, I don't want to say a more nonchalant substance abuse, but I certainly think that, you know, we've all talked about news stories of the quote unquote occasional drug user. Is there a difference between the disorder and, for lack of a better phrase, you know, normal, abnormal abuse?
So that's a fantastic question. And
thank God, because it took so long to get it out.
Yeah. So fantastic question. I actually had this conversation with my wife a couple of weeks ago on a long car trip, and she was asking me the same thing because I continued. I think the way the conversation actually started was we ended up, I think we had the upcoming event, and one of the words that she used as we were discussing it was addict. And as you do a lot of this work and as you're talking to folks, that's one of those words that tends to make people in the front lines really, really cringe. And the problem with that is that there's a significant degree of judgment when you use the word addict as opposed to when you're talking about addiction. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing, or more interesting as you dig further into this, as you mentioned, substance use disorder. So that's kind of the broad term for, as we're talking about folks and whatever the substance happens to be that they use. And this could be methamphetamine, it could be alcohol, it could be narcotics, it could be marijuana, any other, you know, substance that somebody's using. More specifically, if we're talking about narcotics, folks may say opioid use disorder, but in general, as we're talking about this, trying to reduce some of the stigma from it, we really tend to use substance use disorder. As you talk about this, there's obviously an addiction problem, but the addiction is really a symptom of something else that is underlying. And I think that's where people start to get really hung up in this, that usually folks, as they're taking medication, again, it could be alcohol. It doesn't necessarily have to be using fentanyl, but there's some type of underlying disorder, disease, or mental health condition that is likely driving that. As you work with these patients, I don't think any of us could imagine waking up and thinking that our whole day is going to be committed to the ability to try to find drugs. And these patients were not always like that.
And I'm grateful not only for the facts that you're giving me, but for the candor with which you're approaching this. So UNC Health Blue Ridge and Burke Public Health have been promoting policy changes. Talk a little bit about that. I think you guys are actually saving lives through the changes that you're promoting.
So the answer to your question there, this is one of those pieces of healthcare that really takes a village. And I think really across healthcare, the pieces that we're missing of how we do a better job in healthcare in general very much applies to this particular disorder. And as we come through the last couple of decades, it doesn't seem that healthcare is working very well for much of anything. And again, I don't think that's necessarily anybody's fault. It's just the way that it is. This particular disorder in the recent COVID-19 pandemic, I believe, taught most of us a lesson that we had kind of forgotten. And that was we need to be a unified front. We all need to work together. we were not actually at our hospital. We've always had a relationship with our public health department, and that served us very well when the pandemic came around. And the opportunity was substance use disorder. And as we have continued to partner with our local health department, we have been introduced to other folks in the community that are doing great work, whether it be substance use or providing stable housing, providing food for patients, really addressing a lot of these social determinants of health or drivers of health, whichever one of those phrases you like to use. But there's a huge gap in between the care and the community. And I spent a fair amount of time talking about this earlier in the week, but we do a lot of great work at the hospital when folks need healthcare and admission. We also do a lot of great work in our emergency department, but as we try to refer those patients out, we're not exactly sure. And so we try to get them back to their primary care physicians or back to a primary care physician. And there's this space in between. And I really think that the space in between, we have a huge opportunity as we work with our public health colleagues, also as we work with our fire and EMS, community paramedicine, and just a great opportunity to try to coordinate care between our primary care and our inpatient hospital care.
There are some community health needs assessments that are happening all across the state of North Carolina right now, and one of the biggest challenges is getting people to respond to the surveys. So, we certainly want to encourage folks who are listening and reading to go and check with your local hospital to see how you can help make a difference in the health of your community, because as you're talking, Dr. Frank, there are so many people who are affected by this crisis who may not look like they're suffering from a crisis or an addiction as you pass them on the street.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, this, like I said in earlier in this conversation, this is not a condition that really cares about your zip code or who you are. It's amazing how widespread from, it's thought to be more of a disease of poverty and there's no question that population has concerns with this too, but this could be your neighbor's kid, this could be your grandmother, this could be somebody that you're friends with, their mom, and it may even be somebody closer. We have a local county commissioner who has really been championing this work, and the reason that he has been is that he and his wife lost a son to this. And as, and he's happy to tell you the story, and he's currently doing a lot of work locally as well as throughout the state trying to bring awareness. As we've done this in some of those forums, we actually had another county in our close by proximity, one of their commissioners who came and told us a very similar story of his stepson. So it is widespread, and it is folks that you wouldn't necessarily believe that had this, but it's not good for the patients, and it is very traumatizing to families.
Dr. Anthony Frank, Chief Medical Officer and Senior VP of Medical Affairs at UNC Health Blue Ridge in Morganton, thank you so much. This has been incredibly educational, and I wish you the best of luck in all of the work that you're doing. For those who are listening, Dr. Frank, anywhere else, other resources that you want to send people to?
So, Christine, I would make one comment, and for folks that are interested in more of, really how do we get here, and why is this the case? There is a great book to take a look at. It's called Dreamland: The True Tale of America's Opioid Epidemic, and it was written by Sam Quiones, and that's Quiones. Also, the other books by Beth Macy, if you're interested in some local flair to Morganton, specifically Raising Lazarus, and then her book Dope Sick and the Hulu special around that are great introductions to the crisis and really some of what this looks like in more of a firsthand way.
Okay, and we'll put links to all of those resources in the written blog that accompanies this podcast. Dr. Frank, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and passion and also compassion about this topic with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Christine.